Hey folks, Nate here. You're listening to Critical Care, a show about games, community, and the reasons we play. This is episode 64, featuring Dave Hoffman, creator of indie puzzle game Mixolumia. Enjoy!
My name's Dave Hoffman. My pronouns are they, them. I'm an indie game developer originally from Chicago area, but I live in the Tokyo area now. I have to say these things because, like, I was just outside of Chicago and I'm just outside of Tokyo, and, like, the real ones always get upset. You know, they're like, you know, where in Chicago are you from? Oh, Milwaukee. I'm not really from Milwaukee. But, yeah, I made a game called Mixolumia. It's a musical puzzle game, arcade puzzler, in the same vein as Tetris or Lumines, Puyo Puyo, those kinds of things. And the hook is that the board is rotated 45 degrees. It's this gem shape, and the blocks slide together, and it makes for a very different setup for combos, and also it's open on the back end, so anybody can make sound packs for it. So it's kind of like Tetris Effect, except anybody can make a song for it. Yeah, and also this year I released a game called Executive Golf DX on the Playdate, which was part of the Playdate's first season of games.
Awesome. Well, I won't get into any real Chicago and real Tokyo beef, because I have no frame of reference for geography. but I am very intrigued to talk more about Mixolumia. Yeah, you kind of summed it up well, but having the board shaped like a gem instead of a square might seem like a small change if you haven't played the game or seen it, but definitely encourage folks to check it out if not, because it really kind of radically changes how you approach stuff like combos and sort of just I have been sort of having to reorientate the years of Tetris in my head to kind of accommodate it, which is very, very exciting, having played so many rectangular puzzle games, I guess, for so long, to now feel like I need to relearn how to do that, which is very cool. Before sort of talking about sort of some of the specific stuff about Mixolumia that I find really cool, like you mentioned, like the back end is open, stuff like that, I was curious to learn a bit more just about, like, the I guess the origin and sort of development process of this game. I feel like I remember following it for a while before I actually got a chance to play it, and was, yeah, sort of curious how it came about.
Sure. It was a weird one. It was back in the end of 2018. I had just finished developing Executive Golf DX for the Playdate. which is funny because it, like, just came out. It turns out making hardware takes a long time. It's really hard, and then when a pandemic hits, it takes even longer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we thought the Playdate was going to come out, like, in 2019 or something, and it wound up being 22. So I had just finished Executive Golf DX, and I had another contract coming up in, like, 2 weeks, but I had this period of time all to myself that I couldn't fill. And so the Nintendo Wii eShop had just closed down, or they announced it or something, so you weren't going to be able to buy any more eShop games. And I was just reminiscing about some of the really cool indie eShop games from, like, 2008, that era. You know, there were the, like, art style games, there's, like, the Bit Trip games, just these, like, weird little kind of lo-fi colorful but like interesting games that like, you know, had stuff in them that like, especially the art style games, I'd never really seen people try and like build off of that. And there was one called Rotohex, and I guess it had a Game Boy Color or Game Boy Advance version. I think it was Game Boy Color, called Dial Hex. That was basically like the same, but it had this hexagonal board, and all the pieces were triangles, and they would sort of flow together. And I started wondering, like, you know, I really love Tetris and all those sorts of games. I was like getting big into Lumines. I wondered, you know, why hadn't anybody done like that sort of hexagonal board shape again? And I thought, like, what if I didn't do it with triangles? What if I did it with square, like diamonds? In Dial Hex, you're like rotating pieces and sort of assembling hexagons. That worked really well with the Wiimote, because you could like point directly to the area you wanted to rotate and stuff. So I was thinking about, you know, I really like a game I can play on my laptop without like a mouse, because I hate doing anything with a trackpad.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was thinking like arrow keys, it's much easier to like drop pieces. And my mind was kind of just percolating on that, and it was one of those things where, I don't know, when you're a game developer, you know, when you, if you've ever worked in a customer service job, like I've been, you know, like a cashier, mm-hmm. And you spend all day like ringing up groceries, and then you go to sleep, and then you dream about ringing up groceries all mm-hmm. night because your mind wants to be so good at it. But it's terrible because you wake up and you're like, I just worked 8 hours. Why do I have to do it again? The nice thing about like game development and programming is your brain kind of does the same thing, but you actually like solve problems when you're sleeping sometimes. So it was one of those things where like I woke up and I was like, oh yeah, like, you know, these diamonds sort of sliding together, that could be cool. And I just, I made a little prototype, you know, just like super lo-fi. I used like the Pico 8 palette, which I don't know if you know, Pico 8 is, just for anybody who doesn't know, it's a fantasy console. It's really cool. And I used like a really low resolution and just mocked it up and posted it to Twitter with just the tweet, I don't know what this is. But here, I can't remember exactly what I wrote. Like, is this anything? and, you know, kind of, I just wanted to jam on it for like a weekend, probably. And I didn't have many followers at that time. But I think it was JW from Vlambeer followed me and was like, oh, yeah. That's really cool. And like boosted it. And it got like a surprising amount of attention for like my little audience. So I started chasing it more. I was like, yeah, I could probably knock this out in like a month, you know, make some weird little thing. And I talked to the person who I had a contract coming up with, and they were cool with it. And we'd like sort of, you know, put it off, so I could work on this thing, and it sort of just kept going. I like started to see the potential of it, and the more I worked on it, the more people got like really into it. Like, just, it's, development is weird because, you know, you come up with something you think people will like that you're really into, and it's really hard to show them what's good about it. You know, and there's a few different things you can sort of optimize for in sharing, especially on a site like Twitter, where like something can look cool and something can look fun, which are like two separate things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also something looking fun doesn't necessarily correlate to it being fun. Like I've made stuff that is like super fun to play, and you show it to somebody and they're like, I don't know what's happening. It's like, no, try it, which like is is great. You know, you put it in their hand, they're like, oh, this is great. But like, you can't do that through Twitter when you have like 1 second of their attention and they can't actually interact with it. It has to look fun. And I guess with this, I had stumbled into something that hit both of those. Like it immediately just like connected to people in a very short bite-sized format. So it just started rolling and people thought it was cool that I was documenting the process, which was like kind of natural for me. When I used to work in a studio, we would do like daily morning check-ins just to, you know, keep everybody on task, you know, keep communication with the team, you know, and it's really motivating for me to like, cause I'd write down what I was doing every day. and when you're working on something, you sort of forget where you came from and what you've done. And, you know, you look at something and you're like, this looks like garbage. But then if you look at like your records of like where you were last week or whatever, you're like, oh my God, I got so much done. I'm actually doing great. So it's really motivating for me. So like on Executive Golf DX, Cable Sasser did not request this of me, but I was sending him every week multiple GIFs of the game and like a status report of where it was at, and he'd just be like, cool, you know, this looks great, you don't have to do this. And but you know, it was really motivating for me, and I was like, literally every day I worked, I would, at the end of the day, I'd make a GIF of like the thing I'd worked on and put it into my Trello. And so I had this like cool sort of timeline that I could scroll through and see like the process that I'd gone through. And like keeping a devlog wasn't really a weird idea for me. Like, you know, I'd been on TIGSource in the past, which like for people who don't know, it's an old school forum where a lot of indies hung out, and like, you know, that's where like Spelunky and Fez, you know, devlogs sort of lived. And you know, that wasn't like a weird thing to me to see somebody, to have somebody, you know, openly recording and discussing their development. I guess just like not many people had really done it on Twitter, and they hadn't really done it in the form of a thread. And, you know, it wasn't like super intentional. I just kept building on that first tweet that was like, I don't know what this is. And so people like really started to connect to that, like, following this thing from a glimmer of an idea and like a really crummy mock-up to, you know, a playable thing. And then I opened a Patreon, and because, you know, with games, like, you've got to test on people, you know, because the thing that, like I said, a thing that looks fun, you don't know if it is fun for other people, especially something like this was weird. I was very aware that this wasn't playing like Tetris or Puyo Puyo or Lumines. Like, it had elements that transferred, but like setting up combos was very different. And I knew I probably wasn't the one who was going to figure out how to do it the best, even though I made it. Like, I knew that as soon as I released it, there would be people who would like annihilate me in it, who were, you know, much better at puzzle games, and, you know, people who knew like quality of life stuff that the game needed. And so I didn't want to release it to a wider audience, but I wanted a little feedback. So, like, you know, I had gave some friends some keys, and I opened up Patreon, and the response was really good, and immediately people like busted the game, and the scoring was like all wrong. I had to, you know, it turns out, you know, this was a learning process for me. I'd never made a game like this before, and so I like you know, did the game designer thing and opened up a spreadsheet and like plugged numbers and calculations in to see how, like, with my equations, if you get a combo bigger than this, then like you'll just annihilate the game. And, you know, messing with that and like getting feedback as to like what quality of life things people wanted and implementing that. Anyway, a year passed, yeah, because I started in like 2019 and wound up releasing it in 2020 on itch, and I expected like 12 people to buy it. I figured anyone who wanted it, who had been following the thread, would probably have just dropped like $5 on Patreon and gotten it and left, right? I did my best for like a little marketing push, but you know, I gained some followers, but I still did not expect anything of this. Yeah, we're not like, you know, I'm not a millionaire or anything. It hasn't made me rich. It hasn't even paid like what I would call a living wage. But for like a game from somebody relatively unknown on itch, it did really well. We were like the top selling game on itch, the top selling non-pornographic game on itch the launch week. You know, we were like launched alongside like the big Frog Fractions Redux, whatever they called that, which was like a huge honor to be like up there on the leaderboards next to Frog Fractions, you know. It was really cool. And, you know, people I really respect in the industry got into it. I was just shocked. And people were like making sound packs, and I made a Discord and people joined that, and people were like clamoring for Steam. It kind of blew my mind. I'd never hit any level of success like that with something that I had made. I've sort of been adding to the game ever since to try and like thank everyone for being so into it. And you know, it was just a couple of weeks ago. You know, the game's been out for like 2 years now, and it's out on Switch now too, which was like a whole thing. And we added a bunch of stuff, and we're still adding stuff. But people are still like figuring out how to get higher scores, and like they speed run it. You know, because there's a mode where you clear 450 blocks, and they'll do that as fast as possible. And they're still finding strategies to do better 2 years later, this weird little game. And that kind of blows my mind. I never, ever, ever expected that. And, you know, the top players, I can't even comprehend. Like, they're doing, like, 11-dimensional chess in this game. And, you know, it makes me proud because there's, like, the game is approachable enough where you can sort of play it like Bejeweled, where you can just sort of drop stuff and, you know, get lucky and get a big combo and be like, ooh, it's pretty, you know, and have a good time and listen to the music and zone out. And I think that's great. I love that it's that approachable. And, you know, people are like, I don't really know what's going on, you know, or I'm bad at this or whatever. It's like, no, you're doing great. And then on the other side of things, you get these people who get like really into it, and it rewards them for that, because you can really dig into theorizing about how things will fall together and all that stuff. So it's been really wild to see the sort of different players that have come to it, enjoyed it in different ways. It's neat. I forget where we started with that. I just talked for like 20 minutes.
It's cool. It's very interesting. There's a lot I want to pick out from there. Yeah, I think, I mean, you say that you were sort of surprised by how well it did, sort of relative for being a small project on itch. And even like an arcade puzzle game, which I think also just from my limited knowledge of market research and sale stats and stuff like that, seems like a hard genre to release in.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about that. And I don't know if I should. Like, I'm really happy I made it, but it is it is niche. Like, it's that these are not the big sellers. Especially, you know, I've learned a lot and theorized a lot about, you know, what sells games now.
Yeah, I think we'll get into that maybe a little bit later. But like, what has stood out to me about Mixolumbia is like the degree to which it feels like it's been embraced by people that like this style of game in a way that I don't think very many other puzzle games really have, like, not the style of like kind of arcade puzzle games. So it's been like, as someone who likes that style of game a lot, it's been very cool to see, like, you know, just random people that I know like excited to play this game and sort of like seeing what people are making on Twitter. Like, I remember, I imagine a lot of people probably also learned about the game from this tweet, but somebody had made, oh gosh, I want to say Chop Suey sound pack.
That's right.
Which was just incredible and hilarious.
Yeah. Hearing but, them, they talked about that on the Giant Bomb podcast, mm-hmm. which was like, this is, I don't know. You know, part of me is like, oh, I want to be like a serious artist who's like, take it seriously and, you know, oh, change lives. But also, you know, if like on Twitter, I am always making just like nonsense posts and being goofy. And, you know, it seems appropriate that would be like part of the packages. And people made like goofy sound packs of, you know. that seems appropriate.
Yeah, well, I think it really speaks to the degree to which this game is like hitting for people in a way that like you mentioned Tetris Effect, which I sort of think of as like one of the other, like, I guess notable or like semi widely played puzzle games of this style of the last, I don't know, 5 years, maybe longer. And that game, to me, I kind of feel is really antithetical to Mixolumbia in a lot of ways in terms of how it approaches creativity and player expression, both like within the game itself, but also in terms of just like Tetris being a super litigious company that does not want you making fan projects. So I think probably to some degree, like that sort of hostile attitude from like a lot of the bigger companies still making this type of game, it probably spills over into people finding something like Mixolumbia and finding it really fun and exciting to like have something that encourages and like allows for a lot of expression, like both built into the game, but also like, you know, making custom sound packs, making your own palette, stuff like that. Which I did want to talk a bit about sort of how you sort of approach those aspects of like building out these tools, both for customization, but also for accessibility, which is another thing I think is noteworthy about Mixolumbia, that for being a game that has a bunch of like really cool flashing like particle effects and stuff, also allows you to dial all of that down if you need to. Which I haven't played every Tetris game or Puyo Puyo game or whatever, but certainly there's sort of a limit there. I wanted to, I guess dig into a bit about, you know, as you were building this game, at what point you were wanted to make it something that other people could kind of expand on and sort of make their own.
Yeah. So immediately I knew I wanted to collaborate with Josie Breckner, who we met through Heather Flowers' Extreme Meat Punks Forever. I drew a little stuff for that, and Josie did the music for that. and I sort of wormed my way into being Josie's friend because I thought she was really cool, and we hit it off. So I knew I wanted to work with Josie on something, and just to like make things easier, I didn't want to use like a pre-existing audio tool because I was worried about like licensing and, you know, how well it would integrate how smart I was as far as integrating things with Game Maker, you know. So I decided the best course of action was to build a custom thing that would just, like, you could drop sound files in a folder and the game would use those. And that way, you know, Josie could just run the game, drop sound files in, and it would work. And she could just send me a folder. You know, she wouldn't have to install an IDE. She wouldn't have to, like, know about the engine or, like, get into Wise or, you know, any of those technologies. Which, you know, it could have probably been more powerful if I'd used something off the shelf. Part of me just likes the challenge. But it was just a really, in my mind, simple way to collaborate, where Josie could just drop sound files into a folder and send them to me, and we wouldn't have to worry about anything. And, you know, I sort of theorized that a benefit to that would be that anybody could do it, and I expected maybe, like, one person would do it. Because it is, you know, it is kind of difficult. Like, writing music is difficult. Mm-hmm. And then it's also, there's a little bit of sound design in there, and then also you have to, like, know how to chop it up properly and, like, anticipate how it can flow and mess with JSON files, which are awful, but you know, people have seemed to be able to figure it out, and so, yeah, you know, in my mind, I really love when you can play with games in a creative way rather than just the ones set out for you by the designer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of my time, like back when I was playing like SimCity 2000, I had the SimCity 2000 Urban Renewal Kit, I think is what it was called, which let you like draw all your own buildings and stuff, like all your own little pixel art buildings. And I think I spent more time in that than actually playing SimCity. I remember you had to like draw them from like different angles and stuff. There was a lot in there, and like that, you know, I guess that appeals to me as an artist or whatever, but anytime a game let me express myself through it, that was huge. And that, you know, that's probably why I wound up doing what I do. You know, I always saw games with like big mod communities. You know, you think about like the Elder Scrolls games,
mm-hmm.
you know, you see the wild stuff people make in that, you know, And I thought that would be really cool. You know, I knew I wouldn't be able to make a Tetris effect or a Luminous worth of content for this game on my shoestring budget, you know. Advantage, you know, trying to turn my weakness into my advantage was like I could just open it up, you know. I'm not a corporation. I don't have to necessarily worry about my image being tarnished by somebody making, you know, legally questionable sound packs of Disturbed or whatever. Like, you know, I can have more of a relationship with the people playing it and encourage them to have a say in what Mixlumia is. So yeah, that was sort of my thinking behind that, and it blew up in a way that I did not expect. There's like on Itch, I think there's like 24 player made sound packs now. It's pretty wild. And like, you know, some of them are like goofy. I'm surprised all of them are very good. Like there are none where I'm like, yeah. All of them are at least interesting in their own way. Some of them are just like stunning. You know, I wish I had the funds to like bring more of them into like an official capacity. But, you know, I do send them little bits of money on Itch.
Do you have like a personal favorite that stands out to you of the ones you played?
There's one by an artist named Mefo, who goes by Mefo, that's really good. There's one called Polaris that I really like. I'm I'm struggling to remember names right now. Laura Platt has one that is very good. There's a bunch by a creator named DevDog, who is like super prolific and gets like pretty out there as far as like really interesting like jazz chords and stuff, but like in service of being like kind of strange. it's very good. But yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah, I was scrolling through them the other day and was just like, I don't even know where to start with these. Like, there's a lot of really cool ones. I haven't gotten to dig into most of them yet.
Yeah. It's like one of my regrets is, you know, I didn't realize that so many people would play this thing. And I never really made it super easy to get these sound packs into the game. Like, you know, you sort of dig around for a folder and you drop them in and it works. But like, it'd be nice if there was like a one click, download something straight into the game. I'm not entirely sure how to achieve that. Part of me wishes somebody else would build that for me. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Right now I'm kind of focused on trying to get more official content in the game, and also I desperately need to work on something else. It's one of those things where you can just keep on working on something forever if you let yourself, but you can't. I'm not gonna keep getting paid for this forever.
Yeah, it does seem like the style of game sort of just is especially tailored to just be, you know, kind of endless in terms of, you know, you play longer, you have new ideas, you keep building them out. There's not like a story to complete as far as I know. Maybe that'll come in future updates. Story of the Diamonds. So switching gears a bit, you know, we were talking a little bit about how there aren't really a ton of this type of puzzle game being released now. You know, there's a couple like big ones like Tetris Effect, Puyo Puyo Tetris, probably a third one. I don't know if they're still making Lumines games. There aren't like a large quantity of these games. They're pretty confined to Tetris and Tetris adjacent things. So I wanted to, I guess, talk a bit about like having made one of these games and sort of seen how people respond to it, and sort of the process of like, you know, trying to market it and get it in people's hands. It sounds like some of that kind of just came just almost as a surprise or accidentally. But sort of what you think about in terms of like this being a market or like a type of game that there is still an audience for, like something that, you know, you could theoretically make like a Mix Lumia 2 or something and, you know, see success.
Yeah, it's rough. And there's like a few issues. One of them is like, you tell people you made like a Match 3 game or whatever. And it's like, why would I play that instead of Candy Crush on my phone? Or like, why would I play Tetris or Puyo Puyo that I don't already know the rules for? Like, you know, that's, some people get excited by that idea, like, ah, oh, a new game I, you know, in the genre I like that I haven't played to death yet. Whereas other people are like, you know, like Tetris is like a sport to them, you know, it's like their baseball. And I've come along and been like, baseball but on an octagon or something, and they're like, go to hell, like, we like baseball, what are you talking about? And so, you know, it can be a hard sell in those ways. And so you tend to get an audience that is looking for like something fresh, in a genre that they vibe with, and that's very cool. So like, the people it attracts seem to dig it, but like, you know, if you want the new Tetris, they are making new Tetrises that are extremely polished and good. If you want a new Puyo Puyo, you can get that on your Switch, you know, for not that much money. And it's got a whole campaign and funny anime characters or whatever. Like, a thing I kind of ran into, a big part of discovery right now is streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of why roguelikes and like multiplayer shooters have been so big in recent years, because they're extremely streamable. They are great for making unlimited content, especially like, you know, a battle royale. It's gonna be a different story every time you play it. You know, like, there's drama just baked into that format. It's great. I love it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes for great streaming. So that's like on the like AAA side. That's what I'm aware of. Like, you know, people can play those games forever because it's like a sport, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then roguelikes, same deal. Like, you can play the same thing over and over, get better. It's different every time. People can watch it and follow along, and you can talk about what's happening while it's happening. There's a weird thing when you're playing an arcade puzzler. It is extremely hard to talk and play at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is, but literally every person, you sit them down with Tetris or Mixlumia or whatever, and challenge them to try and play it as best as they can and talk about what's happening or just literally anything. And that section of your brain will shut down. So streams will either be someone very casually playing, you know, in like relaxed mode or where there's no pressure, and talking about whatever, because they're not really going to be talking about the game. Like, it's the kind of thing where it's very abstract thought, you know, very visual. So, you know, there's like a good amount of strategy and stuff that you're going through, but you're not really like, it's hard to say out loud, you know, I'm going to go over here. And, you know, like if you're in a shooter, you're like, are there guys at that base? Like, should I maybe go try and get the high ground? You know, all that stuff. Whereas with Mixlumia, you're like, should I try and build this combo by making this shape? And, you know, it's hard to keep a stream going talking like that. So you could mm-hmm. play like really casually and just talk about whatever, in which case it's a lot of pressure on the streamer to like generate their own content to talk about. You know, some people pull that off really well. They have stuff to talk about and there's like pleasing shapes and music going on the stream, and, you know, that's great. But it's, you know, that then it really puts a lot of pressure on the streamer to come up with stuff. And the other is like really going hard for score or time or whatever, in which case the person streaming is not going to be talking.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're tuning in, you basically have to be invested in the game. So like, if you're going to be watching competitive, you know, Tetris or whatever, somebody going for the Tetris, or like, you probably have an investment in Tetris. You probably understand what's going on. You know, he really needs the long piece right now. You know, in Mixlumia, you know, it has such a like relatively small audience. It's not going to draw in viewers, you know, if that's like all you stream or whatever. And the people who come in who aren't already familiar with it probably won't know what's going on or what's amazing. I don't know. So it's not really going to get a lot of new players generated from streaming. And so that's a limiting factor in this marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
I have ideas about how this genre could function better as far as bringing people in that way. You know, you could combine the format. I'm not doing multiplayer Mixolymia. I want to put that up. Very clear. I do not have the resources to do that right now, and the game is not. I didn't really build it with that in mind, and it's not set up for that.
Yeah. No Mixolymia 99 coming. No battle royale mode.
I mean, if I were making a new game, that would be part of the plan, because seeing competition adds that drama. Mm-hmm. Like, even if it was like against a an NPC or whatever, you know, I think it. If you add that sort of drama, and then, you know, I see games like Petal Crash is a really good recent game in this vein. You know, there's like these characters, you know, and like Puyo Puyo has characters and stuff too. That's like, what is the game? Spirit Swap. Had a really successful Kickstarter. You know, that game is really close to paneled upon in mechanics with like extra some extra like power-ups and they're like weaving a narrative around it, and there's these really great characters, and you know, that Kickstarter did very well. I mean, it's a higher budget, like they have an actual like team of people working on that now, you know, so they're able to invest a little bit more than I've been able to. But, you know, people can be like, oh, yeah, like queer, horny characters. I love that. Like, I'll play a game for that, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like the puzzle aspect is, like, sort of secondary. Like, that's the thing you're doing, but the draw is, like, the character.
I mean, for some people, right?
Yeah.
It's opening up, like, the funnel. Mm-hmm. To include more people, because there might be people who are like, oh my god, like, thank god, like a modern panel de pawn with like more features, that rules, you know, like they're doing multiplayer, like that's really cool. You know, that's a game that has like historically languished, especially in the West. Like, it's there's several modern indie incarnations of it, but like a really polished one, you know, that's a great selling point for some people. Like, that might be, they might be like, I don't care about characters, or like, you know, I think they showed in the trailer there's some like decorating a space feature. They might not care about any of that, but they could be like really into this modern expanded, you know, version of those mechanics. And, you know, on the other side, there could be people who care about the other things and just want, you know, they're like, oh, cool, a chill puzzle game as well. Thanks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's the larger your budget, I guess, the wider a net you can sort of design to connect with people. You know, I had a very, very focused small net. but I do think there are ways I could have inexpensively strategized to, you know, make it more appealing if I had, you know, had the ideas and the knowledge, which, you know, part of the reason for making anything is to learn how to do it better the next time. So, you know, it's definitely informed how I think about designing things, in that if I want to keep making things, I have to make enough money off of them to make the next one.
Yeah, that kind of segues nicely as we sort of near the end of this, sort of asking this, I believe the game launched on Switch earlier this year.
Yep.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I didn't. My
it was like a couple months ago.
Okay. Okay.
I've lost all track of time.
I felt like it was kind of recent, but you know, my perception of the passing of time has really, really warped over the last couple of years. Same. So impossible for me to know when anything actually happened without a date. But yeah, so obviously, you know, you're still sort of supporting the game, getting out to more people. I was curious, you know, you talked about you have some other ideas, things you would like to do with the game in the future. Do you have plans for any like significant future updates or a Mixolydia 2, or if not, other projects you want to sort of share, or if you can?
Yeah, well, we're... So the content of Mixolydia is like the sound packs. And especially with Switch, you know, you can't get those itch.io sound packs, right? You can't plug your Switch into your computer and drag folders into it. And so I'm working on more content, more sound packs. Jasmine Cooper, our other composer on the game, is coming up with another one that is pretty wild. We just want to get more sound packs into the base game, so that, you know, that's like the number one thing that people request, and it's also a very labor intensive form of content, which I've learned. Next time, try and make a game where the content is easier to produce. That's sort of what I'm focused on right now. I think is that's the a cool thing to expand in the game. You know, that people like, that will make it, you know, give it a little bit more shelf life, I guess. And you know, we can just sort of keep returning to it and doing little updates whenever we come up with new sound packs. Which I think is cool. But yeah, as far as the next thing, I don't have anything to announce. You know, I've got probably like 50 different projects in my head, and it's sort of about selecting, you know, which do I think I actually want to work on, you know? which do I think will actually be good? Which do I think other people will like? And, you know, what will sell, and what's actually possible, you know, with my limited resources. You know, I don't want to get invested in something too big. I don't know. Considering how this one happened, like, basically accidentally, and wound up eating, like, 3 years of my life. You know, who knows what's going to happen, but yeah, I'm not, I mean, at this point, Mixolydia is sort of Mixolydia 2. It's like Mixolydia like 1.5 at this point, because it is very different from what it was when it launched. I think the thing about working on one of these arcade puzzler games is that you get like 100 ideas for other arcade puzzler games, but I think I could be very good at making another one, but I also desperately want to do something else. I'm not making Mixolydia 2, at least not right now. I don't know. I'll watch this space.
Yeah. Well, it's very cool to hear that sound packs are coming for the Switch, especially, because that wasn't something that I played on PC, so it didn't occur to me that until now that, like, you obviously there's no folder browser on the Switch, so no way to get the Chop Suey sound pack in there yet.
Nintendo wouldn't be happy with us.
No, I don't think that would pass certification. But yeah, I mean, this is like such an ideal Switch game that it is cool that you're like, you know, finding or like supporting it in ways that you know, even if you can't do the full community experience, can still, you know, continue expanding on the game. And yeah, you mentioned I didn't get to mention this at the top, but I wanted to because I thought it was cool about how you get you know, a bunch of different ideas for indie puzzle game, like concept, arcade puzzle concepts, sort of speaking to Mixolymia's sort of community aspect. I found it very cool that like one of the first things on the Mixolymia page just links to other puzzle games that you can play as well, which is very cool for someone like me who, you know, is enjoys these type of games, but is maybe not as in tuned with everything that's coming out because a lot of them don't get a ton of attention. But yeah, there's a lot of really neat games on there.
It was really cool. Like part of building this like audience of people who enjoy these games is that they bring these things to me. You know, I wasn't aware of a lot of these things. Mm-hmm. And so they'd be like, have you played this? Have you played that? And I started like really paying attention to the space. And, you know, I just thought it was kind of a shame that like a lot of them weren't getting any attention, and they were like really good and cool and original. So yeah, I, you know, try and, I think it's just a good idea to boost other indies, period. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I figured like, as long as I've got this audience, like, you know, we should try and build up each other. So yeah, it's, the space is weird. You like, we don't even have a category on Steam. Mm-hmm. There's a puzzle category on Steam, and it's
just everything.
it's so broad. It's like, yeah, did you like Mixolymia? You should play, you know, The Witness. You know, you should play Steven Sausage Roll. And it's like, those are very different.
Yeah,
like I love those games, but you know, there's a huge difference between like, you know, the quick thinking, you know, you sort of have to train your subconscious to match shapes, and you try and do it as hard as you can, versus like, I'm gonna sit with my notebook and ruminate about like, what, you know, how do I get into this dome on this island or something. Mm-hmm. Like they're completely different experiences. And you know, it's been a struggle to try and figure out how to tag my game properly or whatever, so that you know, if you're looking at Tetris, if you really like Tetris and Luminous and stuff, like you find Mixolymia. But it's I don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. It's very, there's, we just don't have a space, and it's, you know, often overlooked.
Yeah, in my ideal timeline, there would be like a boomer shooter equivalent for these sort of arcade puzzle games.
There's like Match 3, but it's all like, you know, it's all Honey Pop. Like you're not playing for cool Match 3 or, you know, block dropping like intensity, whatever. You're playing for like scandalously clad anime girls or whatever. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, or which, it's on, you know, your,
no,
yeah,
no hate, but like
just a different thing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so you know, maybe that'll develop in the future, as you know, games like Mixolymia get sort of break out of the puzzle game trap, I guess. would love to see more of these games, to know about the ones that are existing, and I just can't find, and yeah, and see more of like an actual like a established community that sort of is able to find ways to market these in interesting ways. Because it sounds like that was like a huge part of Mixolymia's success. Seemingly, there's definitely something there. There's some amount of people there, just harder to find. But since we're sort of running out of time here, and I don't want to accidentally segue into another topic, where can people find you and your work on the internet? Where is a good place to point them?
Well, as long as Twitter still exists, I am at Dave Makes, DaveMakes, on Twitter. I have been getting back into Tumblr, which has been really fun. That's a very good website right now. I'm on Co-host. That's cohost.org. It's a weird new little social network run by people with like you know, very anti-corporate ideas, and it's rough, but it's very fun. I'm at Geometric on co-host. I don't know. I have a newsletter, but I have a Patreon. I'm Dave Makes on Patreon. But yeah, probably Twitter is where you'll find all the links, all those other things, as you know, until it sinks into the ocean.
Yeah, if you're listening to this in the future, hopefully you can still find these. Did you say your Tumblr username? I don't
Yeah, it's Dave Makes.
Okay, also Dave Makes on there. Okay.
Davemakes.itch.io. That's where, you know, you can get Mixlumia. There's other weird stuff on there too to check out. So
rad. Yeah, and obviously cool. Mixlumia is on Itch and Steam and now on Switch.
Yeah.
If you have a PC, I definitely recommend getting that version for now, just because there's a lot of fun stuff you can mess around with. But I might also pick it up on Switch because I would like to play this in bed. Cool. So I'd like to kind of close the show out by having guests share something cool or inspiring that they've encountered, played, experienced. Can be literally anything, but if you have something that you'd like to sort of shout out or talk about briefly, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I had a fun thing happen on Tumblr this week. I've been on Tumblr for like ages, I think like 12 years or something, but you know, I never really got into it the way I did Twitter, as far as like posting. But you know, I was kind of getting back into it, and I was reading all these posts about this 1973 Martin Scorsese movie called Goncharov. Do you know about this?
Oh yeah, one of my favorites.
Okay, yeah. And it was all this like sort of fandom discussion about its themes and its characters, and you know, arguing about this or that interpretation of it, and I was like, this sounds great, I can't believe I've never heard of this. You know, I like Martin Scorsese, like I haven't seen all his movies, but this sounds up my alley. And like a lot of the posts were tagged with unreality, which I did not know the meaning of. I thought it was like some theme of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that it doesn't exist. There was some sort of merchandise made. It was like a shoe or something, some knockoff shoe that had like a machine generated like credits for this movie that doesn't exist, that was sort of based off of a real movie. I don't know. Anyway, it was called Goncharov, and it's attached to Martin Scorsese's name, and so Tumblr invented this whole movie to discourse about, which is like why Tumblr is extremely good right now. But I, like a fool, went to Twitter and tweeted about my experience of just like you know, how I was getting into the idea of this movie, and it turned out it wasn't real. And then Tumblr screenshotted that, and right now it has, the screenshot of this tweet has like 55,000 notes of just everyone on Tumblr saying, this idiot hasn't seen Goncharov. you know, just basically pointing at me and laughing. But it's like in a fun way, a way where I'm laughing very hard, and like happy to be the butt of this joke. And it's like, it's given me hope, because, you know, once you reach like a certain size on Twitter, you know, the site that is basically about finding a main character to destroy every day, you'll say something, you know. It's sort of like you're having a conversation with some of your friends, or whatever in a room. And then randomly, somebody can hold a megaphone up to your mouth, and it goes out to like a million people. And whatever careless thing you just said goes out to ears that might disagree with you. You know, if you're talking about their favorite YouTuber or something. And so, you know, something will spin out of your sort of sphere of influence, and, you know, people take what you say out of context and get very mad at you. And I've had that happen to me a couple times. Usually it's like, you know, if like far right people, get angry about you saying like, you know, something. And it's very unpleasant. Mm-hmm. You know, it gets in your veins. It makes you just like vibrate all day, you know, with this, like, what if somebody like doxes me? What if, you know, some real like big account, decides to send a bunch of awful people your way. And so it was very refreshing to have this thing blow up on Tumblr where everybody just in a very like teasing but like not mean-spirited way kind of pointed and laughed at you know, basically a practical joke that they had successfully pulled off. Mm-hmm. And you know, I just it brought me great joy. It was like the opposite of what happens on Twitter, and I like that a lot. And you know, I'm sure bad things also happen on Tumblr. People get mad, but it was nice just to have that happen. Mm-hmm. It was like being the butt of a practical joke, but one that I can laugh about, and I love that. Yeah,
I saw your screen cap of the screen cap, getting a few layers deep, but I do love thinking about it as if this was all an elaborate prank to get you specifically to fall for
right.
it.
Right.
That's like, yes, finally we got him. took an entire social media, inventing a fake movie and extensive supporting documents. But it was a huge success.
My friend Plum was like, I can't believe I know the idiot who hasn't seen Gontra. Like, oh my God. I'd be happy if this was my legacy.
Yeah, I'm not on Tumblr, so I've just been following sort of the stuff that's spilling out. But it
mm-hmm.
I feel like I should probably be on Tumblr just because of the significant difference in terms of the amount of joy I'm seeing from these screen caps versus any given tweet that I run into. It's just a full different world over there.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's very different, and I think they're very protective of what they have right now as far as culture, mm-hmm. because it's, you know, it's been formed by like the absolute destruction of the site by what is it, like Verizon who bought them, or Yahoo? I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know who owns it anymore. Keeps changing
like,
hands.
So it seems all the people who get angry at things left, and all that's left are like chill weirdos who are making up lore for movies that don't exist. And mm-hmm. I think it's a fragile ecosystem. And so, you know, I'm just sort of I'm enjoying it.
Awesome. Well, speaking of enjoying things, thanks so much for taking the time to come on and chat. This was a really fun conversation. Very excited to dig into more Maxillumia packs and whatever official stuff you have coming down the pipe. Yeah, we'll keep an eye out for future projects. I'm sure they'll be cool.
Great. Thank you, Nate. This was super fun.
Critical Care is produced by me, Nate Kiernan, with music by Desired. You can find Desired on Bandcamp at desired.bandcamp.com. I'm on Twitter at Nate Kiernan, and you can keep up with everything Critical related at critical.com. If you'd like to help keep the lights on, you can support the show on Ko-fi. And until next time, stay safe, stay home, and remember, this is not game over. We're still fighting, and we're gonna get through this.